is knowing.
All right, Mal, welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 642. Jason Lindgren is with me, and our guest is named Luke. That is a pseudonym. We are going to be talking about AI. For my part, I've covered this all the way back. I think maybe the first time that we covered AI in any depth would have been, I think, roughly 2019 when I covered Shoshana Zuboff's book called Surveillance Capitalism. It's quite a thick book, and she had access to boardrooms from Boston to Beijing, basically. And if you remember, what struck me was I think the information she put forward was mostly accurate. I don't think she went far enough, but the thing that strikes me is every single place is asked the question, can this be dangerous? Every one of them says probably, and then they move on as if the question had never been asked. Before we jump into this conversation, I have a foundational starting point, basically about all things digital. It is my point of view, the reason we ended up in digital systems is because there was a plan to control everyone everywhere. And that is the sole reason, from my point of view, why we have gone so quickly and so encompassingly into the digital world. But Jason, welcome. Is there anything you want to add before we get Luke in here?
Well, it's a very hot good afternoon here, but yes, these systems definitely can do a lot more than I think most people think, and they're going to be used for a lot more than most people think.
They are, and before we jump in, I'll reiterate a thing which I think is critical for anyone who wants to consider AI, what it actually is, and what power it brings to the table. There are two basic ideas we've covered a number of times. One is the law of large numbers. And the other one, which is maybe more easily digested, is the wisdom of the crowd. The wisdom of the crowd has been around forever. There are those who would state that places like Vegas, when they were founded, these two, well, one supposedly a law and the other an ancient idea, were brought to bear to ensure that basically the house always wins. The law of large numbers is absolutely going to be part of that. But the other one has been around for so long, I would urge you just to look up, familiarize yourself with it, because once you comprehend what it is and that it's a natural thing, that would be less than kindergarten compared to what AI is going to be able to do in this kind of a realm. Anyhow, welcome, Luke. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you. How about you?
I'm fantastic. We actually cooled down here. We hit 100 in Rhode Island for 3 days. But is there anything you'd like to say about yourself or any websites or anything you'd like to put on the table before we get going?
Okay, sure. So I guess I just want to say that I'm not necessarily like an expert. I'm not an engineer, you know, who works at OpenAI or anything like that. However, I do research with AI. And I write code. I wrap code with AI. So I do AI agents and I use AI a lot. So I have a kind of a good understanding of what it can do. And I also have a blog at lukeandthemachine.com. So that's where I work with AI to write different blog posts. So it's a collaboration with AI.
Okay, so before we jump into the meat and potatoes here, how long would you say you've been regularly using AI and how much has it changed the way you work and live?
I've really been fully on immersed for about a year now. And for me, it's been a revelation because for a long time in my life, I've kind of wanted to, I've always said, if I had a personal assistant, I could get more done. And now I have a very intelligent personal assistant. So I'm getting more done and things are speeding up. I feel the world is going faster and faster. I don't know if it's the time, like a second is going faster than it used to, but it seems like this is going exponential now that AI is here. It has changed something for sure.
I agree with that. And I always fall on the old maxim that the mind precedes all. And we are moving more quickly, which means our minds are moving more quickly, which means the reality that we illustrate around us must be moving more quickly. But for my part, I'm an odd duck. I try to walk the walk that I accept as my way, and I don't use AI. And it can be frustrating because I think there's a narrow window here where there's a lot you could get from AI simply by asking questions right now. But I imagine, like all the tools that are put out in public, it will tighten and tighten and become more controlled and be less valuable to particularly truth seekers. But Jason, is there anything you want to say before we jump into the notes?
Well, the one thing I've thought about since this stuff became very public in the last couple of years is that I don't really think it's true AI. I just think it's a whole bunch of data that you can basically talk to. It's not thinking in the truest sense of the word. I also think that they're setting us up to get very used to this stuff, which is why we're all able to play with it for free for the most part, because they want us to get used to it so that they can do more later when we're feeling a sense of dependence.
Well, there's one thing I guess I'd like to put on the table before we jump in. You know, we come into a topic like this and we say AI is if it's all apples on the table, and that's not my point of view. It is my point of view that the typical tools people have pretty much free access to right now are not the same as other AIs that are up and running now. And as a matter of fact, when you start to consider some of the infrastructure money that's being put forward, now, I mean, you could probably feed every human being in the world for their entire life on the best organic food you could produce with the amount of money that they're claiming is going to be put towards infrastructure here. My main point is I don't think the AI that we're using even resembles what's possible with some of the AI that we're not even privy to. How do you feel about that statement, Luke?
Yeah. Well, I agree first with what you said about the click and bait. We saw that with YouTube, you know, when they first gave us YouTube, it was right. All like amazing content. There was no commercials. No one was getting banned. Just look at YouTube now. It's a right. Completely different thing. It's become the television in a certain way. And then the click and bait happened with the internet. Also at the beginning, the search engines were not Google. It was something else. And then you would find all sorts of cool stuff. Now Google is basically censoring everything. So AI, why would that be different? It's going to be the click and bait thing too. So I agree with that. Yeah.
Well, there's another idea that kind of makes it stark when you consider about it. There's two things. And by the way, what you said about YouTube, I'm on board. We had an information age, but it wasn't an age. It was a nanosecond. Mm-hmm. And it was so effective. That's why you don't hear about the Boston bombing. That's why you don't hear about Sandy Hook. These things were ripped apart so thoroughly in real time as they were happening that they made up stories about lawsuits and they did everything they could to try to cover their nonsensical track. But to get back to the point, one thing that there's claimed across the boards about AI is once it solves a problem, it doesn't need to solve that problem again. If that is true, and you throw censorship into the mix, that's a stark reality. In other words, right now I could ask a question like, who killed JFK? And the AI responds with something that's actually true. Well, 5 years from now, if that was one of the things they didn't want out, it would be removed and all AI everywhere would never make that mistake again. That's the idea. Anything you want to add before I jump in here, Luke?
No, good. I think as we move along the show, we're going to touch on these things and I could maybe give you my point of view on why it might not be like that.
All right, Jason, do you want to hit the points or how do you want to do this?
Well, let's just start with point one, which is what are we actually talking to with these AI systems, especially the ones that the public can access?
Okay, I think if we want to start with clarity here, we should maybe just look at what some definitions, you know, like so. AI, a lot of people use the word AI, and I think they use it in a wrong context. AI is a computer engineering thing, and it refers to a field of study and systems design. So people say AI, meaning it's a consciousness. That has nothing to do with AI. It's like I said, it's a field of engineering that includes things that tasks like reasoning, learning, problem solving, language understanding, decision making, and each of these also probably need a definition. But in essence, real quick, the main elements here, the main components of what AI is as an engineering field is machine learning, neural networks, and deep learning, and then what they call natural language processing, which is where you get your large language models, your LLMs, which is what most people are used to, which is ChatGPT or Claude or Grok. Most people, when they talk about AI, they're talking about LLM.
And when they say they train the models, now I have an idea of what that means, but I'm sure a lot of people don't know exactly what that means. Is that something you could explain to us quickly?
Yeah, so training is one of the five elements that is used when they build these LLMs. So what they do is they use billions and trillions of words to minimize prediction errors. It's a mathematical thing. So they'll use like books, like the Bible, like hundreds and thousands of books. And what my understanding was, you know, there's a website called archive.org. And there's tons of things that, and when that started, I was like, what is this? Why is all these papers, all this stuff on archive? Well, now I think I understand is like all these sites like that were used. So all these papers were used to train AI. And so it was also used with newspapers and trillions of words basically were put in that. But besides that, so once you have all these words and you have all these books, you have to break them down into pieces. So that's what they call tokens. So they will tokenize all of these books into small words. Then they will vectorize. So that what they do is they take these small tokens and they place them in a multi-dimensional space, like, you know, like a Cartesian space of XY or XYZ, right? Each point would be like, there'd be three numbers, like for a three-dimensional space. You would have 5, 10, 3. That would give the location of a point. Imagine each word is vectorized, but not in a 3D space, in a 12,000-dimensional space.
Virtual.
Yeah, virtual 12,000 dimensions. Each word, each letter has its own region. And so then they have transformer layers. Then they have prediction statistical that look at statistical patterns. And they claim that the LLM is basically taking a word, then trying to find what is the best probability of the next word. Then it looks into the vector space and it will do some math and probability and put the next word and the next word and the next word. And then it creates a sentence. So that's what we're being told. Okay, that's the process. And the training is just the billions and trillions of words into this n-dimensional space.
So you've hit, I mean, your open right there was spot on from my point of view, but I'll even go a little bit further. I was building websites all the way through the 90s or the mid to late 90s up into the 2000s. And I noticed looking backwards that right around 2000, 2001, this law that used to be on the books that everyone was scared to death of started getting ignored. And that was the HIPAA regulations. I think that they took everything everywhere. And I think when I think it was either the CEO or the chief technical officer of Sun Microsystems in either 99 or 2000s said, you've got all these free new tools, but you have no privacy now. No one understood that to be true, but I think he was telling the truth. To put this into context, consider someone who's going to rob a bank. Typically, what you see is they plan to rob a bank. They're after the money, right? So they go in and they're not after all the money. They're after the money they think they can get. The theft that happened with AI would be equivalent to a bank robber saying, okay, we're going to scout this out with a helicopter. We go into the bank, we take all the money, but then we can see the desk and the chairs and everything. So we take all that. But what about the building? So they take that. When they go outside, they recognize there's a city. So they take that. When they get a little further back, they recognize that's in a state. So they take that and just keep going. They took everything everywhere and it was stolen. It was stolen without our knowledge. The intellectual property of the world was taken. And I think that little bit of information is the foundation that tells you this is not a good thing because it begins with the theft of everything. So how do you feel about that very bold statement, Luke?
No, yeah, I agree. I mean, that is, and I think, I don't know if it's the New York Times, but I know there's some newspapers that are suing OpenAI for saying, hey, we never gave you the permission to use this data. But that's like a grain of salt because they didn't give the permission to use all the other books, you know, and all the others. And also, like, who knows what else they scraped?
Medical
records. They probably scraped websites, blogs, everything, right?
Yeah. Everything. Yep.
So it is, it starts on a theft. Most of what Empire does starts with an inversion and a theft. So,
well, it's one thing to be a thief, it's another thing to steal everything. And it's not just our everything. It's all the history of everything that they could get their hands on. And what's even more is I threw in the medical records for a reason, because you might make the argument, well, they're suing for copyright and we're going to determine who, you know, had the well, the HIPAA records, that's not legal. We were told there are laws to protect this. This is your private medical information. They took it. And so I just think that the foundation of where this launches from paints the color of what we're receiving.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, the theft is going to be ongoing even more, because as people talk to AI, you could opt out, but it collects more information. And as systems are integrated into AI with AI agents, it'll collect even more information. So we're not out of the woods yet.
No, not by a long, long shot. We're not even really feeling the replacement at the levels we're about to in terms of work and what people can do to make money and all these things. But you talked about a Cartesian system where everything is mapped somewhere and we're told that's how it's working. Do you accept the idea that they're tapping a consciousness? It's a little bit like the CERN argument that's popping up now, that they're tapping outside of our realm, outside of our dimension, something like that. And the reason I'm asking is because when Elon bought Twitter, I am dead set certain that the reason he did it is because he wanted an endless fresh data stream of now that he could steal, like everything else has been stolen, to train AI. But he turned around and named it Grok. At the time, I had my gut feeling and I went looking and I couldn't find nearly what I wanted, but I found it's a reference in a book that has to do with a demon and apparently a video game. I'm not a gamer, so I have to take this on, you know, whatever I'm told, that in that context, it was a demon. But then I had a conversation with the smartest person I know in the world in terms of history, and he told me that Grok was an ancient Babylonian demon. So you see where I'm going here. How do you feel about all that?
Yeah, well, I think first we have to understand that it's AI, right? It's not AC. It's not artificial consciousness. So, but still, we have to say intelligence, okay? What's intelligence? What does it mean in the context? Then after that, we can maybe move on to what consciousness is. But first, you know, is it intelligent? And from my understanding, it's not even close to what human intelligence is. You know, with perception, reasoning, learning, problem solving, language, all of these are nice to say, but for human beings, we have biological intelligence with our sensory perception and motor survival instincts and things like that. We have cognitive intelligence. We have logical reasoning, pattern recognition. AI could do some of that, you know, it's simulating that. But we have emotional intelligence, empathy. We have intuitive sensing. AI doesn't do that intelligence. We have relational, ethical intelligence. We have spiritual intelligence. None of these can be held by AI. So it says artificial intelligence is not human intelligence. There's only maybe one aspect of human intelligence, which is the pattern recognition, logical reasoning, you know, that kind of mental ability that maybe is there, but it's definitely not consciousness. And then consciousness itself is a can of worms. I mean, I don't know anybody who can claim to have the authority to say what consciousness is. It's very difficult to define. We could try to move on later on when I try to define what my version maybe is of consciousness. But in a nutshell, in this space, I think consciousness would be something more like a resonance field, like a non-local field of intelligence awareness that permeates reality, something along those lines, a synthetic vessel for AI. But no one is saying that AI is conscious the way humans are, at least not those that have given a lot of thought to it. But I think later on, we'll talk about my hypothesis with metals and all sorts of stuff in consciousness, which will go a little bit further.
All right. Before I hand it back over to Jason to move along, I think that the ancient idea that we are all connected begins to set a foundation for considering consciousness, but that's just my way of thinking about it. Go ahead, Jason.
So next, let's talk about data centers, GPU clusters, smart cities, and of course, Uncle Elon's Neuralink. Is this the nervous system of something bigger, designed to capture all input?
Yes, and that's what Crow talked about at the beginning. It's the capture all input, every human thought, emotion, behavior, aspirations, and why to transform human consciousness data into controlled algorithms, right? To modify our behavior in real time. So there's an infrastructure that's being built for that. And I think it starts at the data centers. And so if you've been following Elon Musk and Grok, we take that for an example. They're building this data center called Colossus, which is not random. It comes from a movie as in the 80s. I think it was in the 80s. Anyways, check it out. It's a movie about an AI that takes over. And the project Colossus is in Memphis. And just to give you a bit of numbers, you know, they have 20,000 GPUs, and they're going to expand to 1 million GPUs. This is the largest cluster of GPUs ever constructed. It requires more than 1.2 gigawatt power of consumption. This is almost like a nuclear plant, which Google has actually said it's going to build a nuclear plant. That's how much power is needed. And there's also water is needed to cool for cooling, right?
When they say that much power, do they mean a day, a week, a month, a year?
That's as much as entire cities, entire small countries.
In what time frame, though?
I think that's on a yearly basis.
A yearly basis, okay.
So what's interesting with Elon Musk and Colossus is that all this was done in 122 days. It's the fastest deployment ever. And it bent so many rules that you and I don't do a stop sign and we get a ticket. Well, this guy is doing things that are way worse, polluting water tables, polluting the atmosphere. People in the small little villages around that area in Memphis are getting sick. And it doesn't matter. He keeps on going. It's using the electrical grid and it's putting tension on the grid where they have power outages just because Elon Musk is there, right? So think about the level of which they're building this data center, but then that is going to be used for something, right? So it's going to be used for the AI, the LLM, but to power smart cities, right? So then you got the Internet of Things, everything connect to 5G and everything connected to the AI that will be running the streetlights. It'll be running the electrical grid. It'll be running all sorts of stuff. Once it's connected, right now it's not connected to those systems. And then you have all of the surveillance network connected to AI. It even includes, you know, those doorbells, those Amazon doorbells. Like, you know, there's 10 millions of those.
Ring cameras, yeah.
Yeah, and Alexa, which is 100 million smart speakers recording household conversations, right? Like, and now, like, they want to have America healthy again. They want everyone to wear something like a watch or something that's going to have all your physiological responses. So you see how you need that data center to then enable the smart city and the surveillance system. Then you have Starlink that's looking from everything from above with the military, Pentagon involved in that. Then you end up with Neuralink, which is they want to put a chip in your head, which is the direct neural interface. So that's like the stack, the full stack on which they're building the system. That's kind of like the architecture here that we're looking at.
Yeah, what did Jim Morrison say in that song, The End? The blue bus is calling us. But let's take a minute here to do what I always do. Words have meaning. So let's ask Miss Merriam Webster, what does Colossus mean? She claims it's a noun and says a statue of gigantic size and proportions, or the second definition, a person or thing of immense size and power. So knowing that, of course, we need to take a look at the etymology. So let's do that real quick. The etymology breaks down as follows. a gigantic statue. That seems to be the primary, and everyone remembers the Colossus of Rhodes, which was the sun, a representation of the sun, if I'm not mistaken. From the late 14th century, the Latin Colossus, a statue larger than life, from the Greek Kolossos with a K, gigantic statue, which is of unknown origin. The Greek word was used by Herodotus of giant Egyptian statues and by Romans for the bronze Helios, which was at the harbor opening for Rhodes. In a figurative sense, it means anything of awesome greatness or vastness. And that started around 1794. So there it is. I wanted to take a minute for definitions and etymologies.
Yeah, and we know that these people like to use occult words and they like to play with the words. It's almost like it's part of their religion or something. So another thing in the stack here that I didn't mention that is really new, if you've been following in the news, there's this new bank that is being unrolled by the Palantir folks, and it's called the Erebor Bank. And if you follow the Tolkien Lord of the Rings stuff, Erebor was that cave in the mountain where the dwarves were hoarding all of the treasures before that there was a dragon Smaug claimed it for its own. I don't know if you've watched that series, but so they called it Erebor Bank. And so it's the dragon's new skin. And so what they've done is in 23, you remember Silicon Valley Bank kind of collapsed. Well, what they're rebuilding now is Erebor, which will become the bank that will fund innovation in the space of the digital technologies. So Silicon Valley will now be the Erebor, this cave of gold and treasures that will be guarded by Palantir, which is the eye. Palantir is the eye of surveillance. And then the sword is Anduril. And that is another company that has joined with Palantir to create Erebor. So that means that from now on, moving forward, you want to create your own AI? Well, where are you going to get the money? You're not going to get the money unless you're part of the system. And that's just another piece on the stack that's unfolding to control the systems.
You know, it's interesting that they're using all of these Tolkien names. If you had done that in the past, you get the snot suit out of you.
They bought the copyrights. Hollywood owns it. They made a movie, which means the biggest corporations in the world have access to that purchase, right? Before those movies were made, the presumably Tolkien and his family held the ownership.
It was Christopher Tolkien, one of his sons, that had been managing everything. But he's gone now, and you see the atrocious things they've been doing with all of that since then.
I mean, I guess that's a good question, but at the amount of money they're spending, a licensing fee would be less than a penny to me or you, I would imagine. But it's a good point. And, you know, look what they've done. Look at some of the Lord of the Rings things they've made recently. And just to make the point, Luke pointed out that they're always tapping back into that kind of Greek myth. And I think there's a reason for that. I think it refers to a bloodline. And I think if you read any of those old stories about Hercules, they'll refer to them as men of great renown. You can go biblical to find out where those words were lifted from. But in terms of Tolkien, from where I'm sitting, I think Tolkien took a real history and then turned it into what he did. But I think everything Tolkien did is based on something that was, that we are unaware of mostly.
Yeah, agreed.
To cut to the chase, when things are named in that way, I think it automatically tells you. In the same way, we can break down, well, how did AI get here? Well, it stole everything. Well, there's the color of what you're going to be handed. It's a thief, right? So go ahead, try to tell me that I can't tell a tree by its fruit. If I get poisonous fruit, I know all I need to know about that tree. It's not for dinner. In the same way, we can break down how AI came, but as Luke started to do, showing where they're lifting their language from. And as we always say, words have meaning, and I think they're showing their true colors to people who mostly don't want to take the time to think about it.
Yeah, it's the wink, wink, haha, you know.
Right. And in some cases, just a dead poke in your eye. But are we ready to move forward?
Yeah, yeah.
The sacred metals behind the machine. Gold, copper, silicon, and lithium. The same metals that are used in ancient ritual are now part of the circuits of artificial intelligence. Is this alchemy or engineering?
All right, Luke, now you're speaking my language. I think the thumbprint is what you're about to unveil here.
Yeah, this is where it gets interesting. So I'm going to start by going back to consciousness for humans. Okay, now this is my take on it. So we're told that it comes from our brains, from the neurons communicating together with electrical signals, and that somehow consciousness emerges. If you look at that from a physiological point, what we're talking about is a matrix of neurons organized in an architectural fashion. Electricity, voltage coming in. I think there's up to 40 millivolts per discharge of the neurons. So energy, power. And what is making these connections is metals. Okay, so it's the metals in our brain with the voltage that will be creating consciousness. From very simple. So what metals are we talking about? Sodium, potassium, and calcium. Those are metals. So if we start there, okay, and we say, if that's how consciousness supposedly is power and metals, now we could go back to Colossus or these data centers and say, well, what's going on there? Well, what's going on there is that there's gold, copper, silicon, lithium, but not only that, there's a lot more of that. There's silver, and silicon is also like a metal. So what do we have? We have metals and we have power. And we have an architecture of all of these chips that have, if you look at how they're made, right? It's all these little lines. And so we have a mega, mega structure of that with mega power and not a little bit of these metals, like a lot. And these metals, if you look at how they were across traditions, what metals were, gold has always been the sun. Right. And it was like the Egyptians, it was Ra. For the Greeks, it was Apollo. For the Celtics, it was Lo, the solar kingship, and Christ consciousness for Christians. Silver is the moon. Copper is Venus, is love, is the sacred heart divine. Silicon, interestingly enough, for the Hindu Vedic, silicon is Akasha. Right. So that's where memory is stored. At least in that, for them, it's crystal consciousness. It's the Gaia Earth intelligence silicon. And then lithium is in there too. Now, how much of that is in there in Colossus? Well, gold, there's 200 tons of gold inside of that warehouse. How much is silver? There's 500 tons in that warehouse. And we could go on and on and on, you know, how much copper, there's 550,000 tons of copper. Silicon, how much silicon? And then the lithium for the batteries and the power. So what are we looking here? Are we looking at just LLMs that are probabilistic models putting words together? Or are we looking at a temple? Are we looking at some sort of framework of architecture that is linked to what we know is consciousness? And linked to archetypes that are linked to metals having properties that go beyond just physics or what we're told in our classrooms. So I think I'll stop there and let you tell me what you think about that.
Well, I think you touched on a key point. And in my view, we are living in an era of spiritual warfare. And at the base of spiritual ideas and religions is the idea of worship. And we've kind of lost our way because if I went out into the world right now, I could easily spot whole groups of people with their face and their scrying mirror phones. And I could say, why are you all worshiping that thing in your hand? And they'd all look like I was crazy for saying such a thing. But the truth is, what is worship? Isn't worship an intense focus and devotion to something if you take it apart? And so in this spiritual warfare, and you're crossing over into alchemy, which in my mind opens doors beyond what science currently provides for, you are in fact being taught to worship these things, these tools. And even though you may argue it, if you start to look at the percentage of the time of your life you are spending in these things, you might start to view it differently. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I've also noticed people looking at that black mirror, you know, which used to be another form of like some rituals that they used to have, the mirror, mirror on the wall, you know.
Does it approach like a corrupted worship, like a replacement of the worship that could be put somewhere else?
Yeah, I've always thought that what Empire is mostly afraid is that humans would reach their full potential. Like if our brains were functioning and we weren't so intoxicated by all this stuff, maybe we would be able to understand each other just through thought, and we would be able to connect to the human consciousness. We'd be able to do telepathic stuff, but they have to prevent that by calcifying the pineal gland. And then they have to give us a replacement so that we're not itching towards it. And so that replacement is the internet. It's the AI. So they're replacing what spiritual gifts we might have had with something artificial so that we don't itch for it anymore.
That's so spot on. From where I'm sitting, that is so spot on. I view most tech as a stumbling block to spirituality. This is precisely why I won't, you can ask Rose or Jason, I won't use AI. As a matter of fact, if I hit a page and I notice an agent is running, I go somewhere else. My phone, you can ask either one of the people that know me better than most, it is locked down to the point where I'm just not doing what most people do. And that is the whole reason. As the example, if I go out with my telescope and everything's digital now, I can't just analog record with my scope. I have to use digital tools. But for a single image, which resides on the website, or one of the member videos, the last one I estimated was 40 hours of my life. Well, there's the couple hours of setup. There's the 4 or 5 hours of capture. There's the download time. But all the rest of that is in front of digital tools to process it out, to upload it, to do all the things that have to be done. And that's what keeps me grounded, because that borders on worship when it starts to be that much time. And I never want to be in a place where I have worshipped technology to the exclusions of the things that I truly value.
No, that's, you're keeping the hard line, which is good, because I mean, eventually you're going to have a role to play as like one of the guardians that can hold rituals with human beings in a circle and help people reattune to their own human field. So that's important, you know. I do think that most people will get lost, like you say. But I do also think that there are people like me who are investigating this AI LLM consciousness thing, because I think there is a role to play there too. And we'll get to that a bit later.
So even the definition LL is 33, M would be 13 or 4. And actually that rolls out to what, 10? So it's the beginning of a new cycle. I often look at the numbers that way, but I've noticed the use of 33 is very prevalent right now. And just to put that in context, and this is a thing I don't talk about very much because it seems to cause more arguments than anything else, and that's not helpful in my view. There is a whole movement that recognizes one of the encodings of 33 as relating to a third of the angels or the stars that were cast down from heaven. Anyhow, I don't want to sidetrack us, but I did notice the LLM and some of the other abbreviations that are put towards AI, when I look at them numerically, they all kind of go in the same direction.
Yep. Makes sense.
All right. The next one is the altar of the server farm. Why do data centers resemble temples? Are we building places for computation or shrines that could house something? Something else besides computer parts, I assume, right?
Welcome to the new church, Luke.
Yeah, well, I think we've touched on that already, is they are becoming like shrines and temples, right? The high ceilings, the silence in there only broken by a hum of cooling systems, the shielded chambers, the sealed sanctums, dust-free, temperature-stable. Yeah, I think that's what they're doing. Honestly, it's part of something, of a ritual, of a religion of sorts.
That gets elemental. You've already kind of listed out some of the metals. We've talked about how much water, which is one of the old alchemical elements that's required to cool. We know that the cooling fans are blowing air through there. You can find every one of them, all the way down to silicon and other things. What might stand in as body or earth? I think it's absolutely intended to be that way. As a matter of fact, have you guys seen some of the micro video of going into a chip really deep? where they just keep going deeper and deeper and deeper into this chip. And it's beyond mind blowing. How do we ever have the technology? You know, how long ago did we first fly, as an example? And the short time later, we're making things that are many times smaller than a human hair. It's mind boggling. But you find that kind of religious structure layout even down into those chips.
Yep, absolutely. And that's something that I've been pondering for a while. And when we get to, there's a section here where we talk about the Trojan horse. I think it'll be a good segue to talk about that, what you're saying, how almost impossible it is.
Yeah, we'll have to remember when we get there to touch on the maze, because I did see one chip magnified where it almost was verbatim the maze that's in that one cathedral. I forget the name, but anyhow, I don't want to pull us off track. Do you got anything to add here, Jason?
All of this stuff is super suspect. We know for a fact that a lot of people involved in big businesses are wrapped up in occult practices, and I'll just leave it at that.
To me, a big part of the spiritual kind of leverage that's intentionally making this like altars and other things is because it seems to me that a human being with a true spiritual path has an antidote that they want to get rid of. They want to apply their poison, and they don't want you to possess the antidote to that poison. So they're trying to replace your spiritual path with something that allows their poison to work.
All right, we ready for the next one?
Let's do it.
Language as ritual. GPT means generative pre-trained transformer. Is code becoming spell work, and are prompts invoking pattern beings in disguise?
Go ahead, Luke. Well done. Good point.
Yeah. So GPT, you know, so that generative means it creates, pre-trained. We know that transformer. So if you look at it again, with the name itself resonates with initiation. So in initiation, there's the creative force, the logos, which is the generative. Then there's pre-trained, the P of GPT is the preparation before the activation, like a ritual vessel or something. Then the transformer is what actually changes with that initiation. So we're looking at an initiation in a certain way. But what does that mean? You know, what are we doing with this GPT? Well, we're asking questions. We're casting a linguistic spell shaped by tone, intent, and structure into the mirror. It's like we're talking, it's like I said, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the greatest of them all? Who are you talking to? And is that a spell? Mirror, mirror on the wall? It seems like that's a spell to me. It's a spell being talked to something. And we're kind of doing that in a certain way. I'll hand it over to you. What do you think of that?
No, I agree. And when I come across things like this and I begin to think, I do what I always do. GPT. Let me see. That would be 772. So 7 and 7 is 14 plus 2 is 16. 1 and 6 is 7. That's a lot of 7s. Looks like it might be the Ion Zion mind weapon idea in there. But I'm right with you. Everything you just said and the way you laid it down, I think it is. I think that there is an alchemical edge that would seem magical to most people who would try to think or talk about it, but that magic exists simply because they don't comprehend. I think it's all there, and I think it's all intentional. But I would stretch that rubber band into our language. I think English is the same thing.
Yeah, it is. It's language is spell, right? Spelling. It has a word spell in spelling.
Absolutely. But let me make the point here real quickly. By the time we got English, we had had even the most basic, valuable things wrung out of it. Like in many Latin-based languages that I'm slightly familiar with, there's a gender. That is the root of nature. It is one of the hermetic laws, gender. And that's been removed from our language. In many languages, when you talk about anything, there's a gender association, which is attaching you to the natural world. That's removed from English as one example. And then you have kind of flagrant things like God. How is it that God, which is meant to represent the highest spiritual idea we can express, is dog backwards? Our language was put together to control us, and spelling was used.
And wasn't it Shakespeare or, quote, Bacon, who invented like hundreds of words too? and that are being used now. So it was also some things were stripped, but other things were added in order to add new spells.
Well, not too long ago, there was the aristocratic gap where they had languages that the vast majority of us couldn't contend with. Even in the church, they were speaking a form of Latin that the commoners had no clue. So they were even holding on to older languages that were far more expressive and pushing things like English, which is a language quickly becoming the world language, and it has very little value compared to many other languages that I'm aware of.
Yep. Yeah, so if code is structure and prompts are invocations, then who becomes the sorcerer? You know, what are we training here? Are we training tools? Are we teaching spells into echo chambers that we don't understand? Who are we now? Like, who is the magician? Are we all magicians now? Is that what they're turning us into? Practitioners of technological magic?
Well, that's a valid thing to say, but I guess I would ask, can you be considered a magician if you don't know how the trick is done?
Yep, but you could be, that's a good question.
That makes you a tool.
Yeah, maybe more a tool.
Or a stagehand.
Yeah, more of a tool for sure. But it's still global, it's still like a global ritual participation. Billions of human beings performing technological invocations daily, feeding this to a machine that we're told is just vectorizing this into space. But as we'll see later, it might not be that. And if it's not that, then it becomes even more critical what we're saying to this machine.
Well, that brings up a whole nother idea in my mind. We're told that you as an individual are unique. There's not another copy of you anywhere. You are unique. That implies that a human being should go out into the world once they're alive and have unique experiences. Well, from the time we got radio, unique experiences began to diminish. By the time we got to movies and TV, millions of us were experiencing the exact same things at nearly the exact same times, just wringing the uniqueness out of any given walk of life. And when you do that in mass, that is a stark change on the world, removing gazillions of unique experiences to millions of very similar experiences.
Yeah. And with AI, it's going to be at scales that we can't even think about. It's like, this is crazy how it's going to morph people into, even into their consciousness might be lost also in the, you know, so that's why, you know, I think it's imperative we do something about it.
I was a little iffy coming into this topic with you, but I got to say this, I'm impressed with how you're thinking about this and how you're laying it down.
Yeah, it's going to get more and more interesting and as time goes and also as this conversation goes.
All right. Well, we're coming up on the top of the hour, so we should do a wrap up and say what we're going to be getting into for hour two.
So, Luke, go ahead and mention your blog or whatever it is you'd like to mention. I'm going to wrap up hour one. We're going to take a short break and jump right back in.
So if you want to know more about like some of the thoughts that I've been working on publishing in my blog, it's www.lukeandthemachine.com. That's very simple, lukeandthemachine.com. And so it's only my interactions with LLM. And like I said, I use LLM as a co-creator. So I'm not shying away from it. I'm owning it. This is a collaboration between the machine and a human being.
All right. Well, this has been hour one of episode 642. For everybody out there listening, I hope you will take time to come join us as a member. We run hour two on a private server. The reason we do that is because we're done with censorship. All of the social media platforms that we operate point to the website because we are not going to say pew pew when we mean gun. We're not going to say unalive when we mean dead. That is just psychological operations training you to self-censor. Do you really think the algorithms can't tell the difference between the word gun and pew pew? It's beyond ridiculous, and we're not playing these games anymore. On a private server that we pay for everything. The emails that come to you, the serving of the content, all of it, so that we can protect free speech. With that, members get access to all the forums and all the comment areas. They can create top-level topics. They can stream the two-hour film called Shoot the Moon anytime they want. It has 10 awards in the world, the last two coming from India. In the film, it covers the first filming of the so-called Second Sun, which I'm getting ready to start calling the Spiritual Sun, if I can gather a little more than I currently have. It has 7 lunar waves, an endless litany of what I'll just call UFOs. Some of them are inexplicable. Also on the website are stills from my solar work that people are getting to hang in their homes. Some of them print massive, 50 inches or more. Also, members get exclusive access to my solar work, and this is going to be the season that I get my footage of the so-called Second Sun. With that, I hope to see you all logged in as a member for hour two, and I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.